morning, ladies and gentlemen. Chris Steiner here on Liberation Station Radio Show. The site is theliberationstation.com. And I'm trying to get the Facebook live stream going. It's stalled out, even though I started it earlier than usual, and see if Facebook is going to allow us to stream today. If that gets going, it'll be at facebook.com/wearechangedtampa. And if not, we'll just post the video later that we're recording from the Skype meeting going between me and the studio right now, and post that up at facebook.com/wearechangedtampa, and as well facebook.com/republicbroadcasting. Today is July 31st, 2022, and we'll jump right into the clip that we have. The first clip we have is going to take most of the first hour. It's from Dr. Paul Thomas, July 5th, 2022, interviewing Dr. Peter McCullough this past, like I say, July 5th, about 3 weeks ago. He has a lot of interesting things to say, and I'm going to see if what's going on with his Facebook stream here, because I think Facebook just doesn't want me to stream live. So I would really like to have it catch the entire broadcast, but I guess that's not going to happen right now. It says live video is starting, and it's been doing that for a few minutes. So I try to restart it during the bumper music, and it's still not going. So I'm going to try to start streaming here at Mad as Hell Network, which is another Facebook page that I am an editor. And gosh, I really don't want to spend too much time here, but if you give me just a moment, I hope that this will work. Facebook is, for some reason, not starting the video. So it's going to be very exciting to hear Dr. McCullough say for the first time, as far as I've heard personally, him say personally that he is not going to take or give any more vaccines of any kind, not just the COVID shots. And I remember, you may remember that I've mentioned that on the Robert Scott Bell Show, Dr. McCullough was quoted, Robert Scott Bell at robertscottbell.com, that on his show, at least five times I've heard him say that Dr. Peter McCullough is no longer going to give any vaccines to his family or friends or take any more himself. So I'm so glad to hear him, Dr. McCullough, come out and say that on his own. And I'm not sure what is going on here with Facebook. I apologize, folks. So for the sake of this live broadcast, we're going to give me just a moment here. I want to really include this here, but I don't think that's going to work. So while we play the clip, I'll get working on the stream and see what's going on. Let's see. We'll get this synchronized to go up on the screen for the video that will be posted later. It's the interview between Dr. Paul Thomas and Dr. McCullough. Get that ready to play. Okay, so Sam, whenever you're ready to go with that, go right ahead.
A very close friend of mine hospitalized in March of 2020. He was one of the first cases in Oregon, almost died. He refused to be intubated. It was so difficult for me to, I didn't have privileges, I'm a pediatrician, he's an older guy, to get those docs to even give him vitamins. I mean, it was just insane. He thankfully survived, and then we now know it's so treatable. You've experienced, I knew this was coming, buddy. You're such an amazing scientist, and you're just at the top of your game, but you're willing to speak the truth. And, you know, I've been living in that world where I'm, as a pediatrician, vaccines is something I've had to deal with. And when I started seeing vaccine side effects, you know, two decades ago, I started waking up to the fact, well, there's a risk benefit here. And, you know, you hadn't been, I don't think, in your typical world having to worry about that. And then all of a sudden, you try to do the right thing. And what have you experienced, and how have you handled that as somebody who was so at the top of, like I said, in your field?
You know, I can tell you through the course of my career, my personal life, I never questioned vaccines. You know, I assumed they were safe and effective. It wasn't my area of research. And, you know, when I was asked to support a vaccine, like the 13-valent pneumococcal vaccine in adult medicine, I did so. When I was asked to take the influenza vaccine, I did so. But since all of this has happened, Paul, I've actually called to question even those vaccines. And on my Twitter feed, P_McCulloughMD, I just you know, present the data, the publications. The vaccine efficacy for the 13-valent pneumococcal vaccine in terms of protection against hospitalization and death is 9%, Paul. 9. Yeah.
I am not surprised that the strains have changed anyway.
Right. So 9%. No, that's even through the period of time when it should have covered. The vaccine efficacy for this year's influenza vaccine, which I took last year.
Yeah.
16%, Paul.
Yeah.
Now, standard conventional acceptance criteria, something that would be acceptable that you would actually, you know, consider, would be at least 50% vaccine efficacy and should last at least a year.
Yeah.
So these are nowhere close to being acceptable products in modern medicine. And those are just two that people would consider uncontroversial. But you know what? Doctors' lives and our knowledge and our analyses of things change as the science changes. And based on those contemporary results, I'm dropping them. They're no longer supportable to me.
Yeah, good for you.
In my practice or for myself.
Yeah, and of course you're aware of the I'd call it a trick where you use relative risk reduction instead of absolute risk reduction, and we don't do true prospective long term all health outcome trials comparing vaccinated to unvaccinated. So it's the data is so skewed towards trying to make the vaccine look like it's helpful when in matter of fact so often it isn't.
Well, there's a whole series of biases. Some of them use what's called negative controls, double negative controls, case control studies. They all work to inflate the treatment effect of vaccines. And also the observation that, a vaccinated person may behave differently than an unvaccinated person. For instance, maybe other factors that influence the proclivity for hospitalizations. Vaccines are such big business, Paul. We must demand large randomized trials that are conclusive. I mean, they have to be convincing before I would consider another vaccine for anybody at this time.
So if I remember correctly, you even got a COVID vaccine back in the beginning.
No, Paul, I never took one because I was, an early COVID-19 casualty, if you will. I was treating patients, and in 2020, I developed COVID-19. I had some pulmonary involvement, but I was able, I was on an FDA-approved protocol where I took drugs in sequence combination. I got through the illness. My wife did as well. And I'll never forget that when the vaccines rolled out, I'm at my office. I'm a big academic medical center, and I got text messages. Dr. McCullough, when do you want to schedule your time to get a vaccine? And I didn't answer, and then it kept going, and it kept getting more messages. Finally, somebody said, "Listen, are you going to take one of these vaccines?" I said, "No, I already had the virus. It's too late. The vaccines are only indicated for someone who has not had COVID in an attempt to prevent COVID." And even at that juncture, in December of 2020, people were actually, they were violating that clinical indication. All medical products have to be medically necessary and clinically indicated, whether they're emergency use authorized or not. Medically necessary means that there is some impending danger where the doctor really thinks it's necessary to take it. Then clinically indicated means it has to fall into the clinical indications that the randomized trials used to include patients in the trials. That would only be, at that time, adults who, again, didn't have COVID and had a desire to prevent COVID. It strictly excluded pregnant women, women of childbearing potential, COVID recovered, and suspected COVID recovered. So at that time, sure, children weren't studied. So I can tell you, at product release, already, and within the first week of release Paul, you know what happened? There were actually thousands of pregnant women who took the vaccine. They're actually encouraged to do so. Mm. Historians will record this. In history, we have never taken an emergency use product that was not clinically indicated, not medically necessary, and just violated that line of inclusion-exclusion for clinical trials and gave a completely experimental injection with no assurances on safety at all, none, to a pregnant woman and the innocent fetus and newborn. Never.
Yeah.
And when we think about that, that was an immediate violation of regulatory science and law. The regulations say strictly along the lines of clinical trials. They were thrown out the day that the COVID-19 vaccines were released.
Yeah. And I imagine you've been following what's just been happening with the regulatory agencies approving this for kids, now down to 6 months.
We have a situation, let's take Pfizer, for example. The FDA just approved Pfizer 6 months to age 5 years. Meantime, Pfizer has court-ordered documents revealing 1,223 deaths after release of their vaccine within 90 days. So wow. The FDA, instead of asking Pfizer to explain how did these people die and how can we protect more Americans from dying, more people worldwide, instead, this is the FDA. The FDA turns a blind eye to court-ordered safety documents and approves the vaccines for children. And, you know, historians will record what's really malfeasance. This is wrongdoing by those in position of authority. John Leake, in our book, Courage to Face COVID-19, John Leake calls it mass negligent homicide.
Yeah, it's incredible. So what's your guess or thought about this? Do you think the COVID illness at this point or the COVID vaccines are the bigger problem?
The COVID-19 vaccines for sure. And, you know, especially in children, paper by House and colleagues published in MMWR December 31st issue 2021 recorded the side effects in children taking the vaccine and importantly asked the parents through the VigiSafe system. And I was astonished to find out how the parents were reporting children incapacitated after receiving the vaccine for several days. I mean, literally, they couldn't go to school. They were very sick. And then in the registrational trials published in New England Journal of Medicine by Frank and Walther, ages 12 to 17, then ages 5 to 12. If you look in the safety data and the figures, the kids get far more sick with taking the vaccine than they ever would with COVID. And in those papers, there was no hospitalizations and deaths, so there's no protection for those outcomes. And very importantly, there's no mention of reducing spread to anyone. So by vaccinating a child, it doesn't influence the family unit at all, doesn't influence the classroom, doesn't influence safety of teachers. In some ways, I thought maybe those encouraging vaccination of children were using the children as human shields. Now, that's a diabolical thought, like an attempt to use a child, an innocent child, as a shield to protect others. But even that type of gruesome aim, if that indeed is the case, is not fulfilled because the data doesn't support it.
Yeah, it's just all risk and no benefit.
It's true. And, in a recent paper about COVID-19 in children that I want to quote for your listeners, and you'll notice we're going to get to the board sanction letter that I got, Paul. One of the problems the board is going to have is with my meticulous citation of the data.
You are the best.
We will review that together. Shine and colleagues published in JAMA a series from 66 pediatric intensive care units, Paul. And it was just giving a description of the type of children who get hospitalized for a respiratory illness. So 2018 to 2020, 1561 children were hospitalized with influenza. I think the average age was 2.8 years, and the mortality rate was 4.5%. About 12% of the kids went on ventilators. To give you an idea, The majority had heart or lung disease or other illnesses at baseline, malignancies. About 5% of kids were on tracheostomy tubes, to give you an idea. So that's before COVID. That's just before COVID. That's basically telling you it happens in this subset of kids across the United States. And you as a pediatrician, I'm sure, well aware. Now, COVID, Paul, 2020 to 2021, 1959 kids admitted, roughly the same time period, for COVID. 5.4% died, and again, 12% intubated, about the same 5% on, on a tracheostomy at baseline. And so what I'm telling you in the Shine paper is that it's possible for children to be hospitalized, even in the ICU, 86% of the time, 88% of the time, they don't go on the ventilator. They're simply given some supportive oxygen, nebulizers, and go home. Those who go on the ventilator, potentially half of them already have a tracheostomy tube. So for a variety of reasons, some actually have to do with neurologic problems from birth, congenital heart disease, et cetera. It exists, but it's not any different than influenza. It's obviously a terrible thing. And it's not something, remember, Supreme Court Justice Sotomayor, in a gross over-exaggeration of the Supreme Court, said there were scores of children in the ICU on ventilators. She gave a gross over-exaggeration. And so the other update I have is there's already been some real-world papers on vaccination of children. There's already been some real-world papers, and they're in JAMA, recent issues. One's by Dora Bawilla from New York State database, and the other one's by Fleming Dutra. Both have shown vaccine efficacy far less than 50%, and basically failure. After 1 or 2 months, it goes down to 0% protection. So completely useless. So my summary for this children is that it's not medically necessary. That's number one. Number two, not clinically indicated. Number three, no randomized trials demonstrating a clinical benefit. Number four, failed real-world studies, Dora Bawilla and Fleming Dutra. Number five, unacceptable side effect profile, even in the short term, in the registrational trials and in the CDC safety study. And then I think the big one, Paul, number six, no assurances in children, none, that this is going to be safe long-term, none. And everything we're learning about these vaccines and the spike protein is bad news.
Yeah. I know you do a deep dive into the science. What do you think about spike protein and possible shedding? I hear stories, but I don't follow the science quite as well as you do. Is that real?
There's only one paper published claiming that they observe shedding, and it's very abstract. I don't think it's conclusive, suggesting immunoglobulin A, which is in the mucus secretions, potentially could have been stimulated by spike protein from another patient. I don't think it's conclusive. We do know in a paper by Banzel and colleagues that the spike protein does travel in exosomes. It's actually quickly packaged in the phospholipid layer. It's interesting because that may deliver the spike protein to tissues and organs where it causes damage, but it may actually immunologically cloak the spike protein and explain why the immunity, the antibodies drop off so quickly in those who've taken the vaccine. And then there's a paper by Stephanie Senoff, a theoretical paper that goes through all the pathophysiology of why shedding could occur. But I think it's almost immaterial now. Our CDC tells us that 82% of Americans have taken a vaccine. They also tell us far more than 50% of Americans have had COVID. So the number of people who either haven't had the vaccine or haven't had COVID are very few out there. And that corresponds with the seroprevalence studies. Seroprevalence studies show when you actually measure really, really good research-grade antibody studies, virtually everybody has some form of antibodies. So if someone came down the street tomorrow and coughed on somebody and some exosomes traveled, I think it's immaterial at this stage. I don't think shedding is where we should be focusing our efforts. Where we should be focusing our efforts is on this new syndrome. And it just happened to the daughter of a U.S. Representative, Kasten, and it's called sudden adult death syndrome, or you consider, you know, sudden teenager death syndrome, and that's death in sleep among those who are vaccinated.
Yeah, we had SIDS in pediatrics after vaccine introduction, or the after the schedule was expanded in the early to mid 80s. I remember, because I was just coming out of medical school and I was in residency, and SIDS was happening all over the place and no explanation. Of course, we now know, if you look at the data, that most of the SIDS deaths happen within a few days of a vaccine. Very few happen a few days before a vaccine. There's a real correlation. With this COVID jab, we're seeing a host of never before seen things. I mean, little kids or young adults having heart attacks and strokes, myocarditis like I've never seen before. I had never seen a case of myocarditis in my 35 years of pediatrics. I've had a kid hospitalized already who went and got the jab at a pharmacy. And what do you think about this disease of rare, this epidemic of rare diseases?
You know, the Pfizer dossier released under court order, I think, is still one of the most important documents out there, because that's what Pfizer was recording when they released their vaccine on the market. People are calling up, and Pfizer actually had pharmacovigilance professionals taking down the vignettes, taking down all the data. Not only did Pfizer record a shocking number, 1,223 deaths, it should have been pulled off the market at no more than 50 deaths. The other products are pulled off the market with a handful of deaths. Not only was it not pulled off the market, but Pfizer dutifully recorded 1,291 new special adverse events of interest, basically new diseases, Paul. And that's exactly what you're describing. The diseases that are caused by the distribution of lipid nanoparticles laced with messenger RNA that codes for the potentially lethal spike protein that was devised in a biosecurity lab in Wuhan, China, is extraordinary. The destruction and damage that does to the body in such an unpredictable manner. You know, I'm working with some basic scientists, Paul, and I've learned a lot about an important question, a question that Joe Rogan asked me. The toughest question I got from Joe Rogan in my record-setting interview. You know, when Joe and I sat down, we set the all-time for the Joe Rogan Experience. We even beat Elon Musk. I've told people, you know, Elon Musk may have a lot of money, but I'm more interesting.
Yes, yes, you are.
but did Joe, here's the question. He said, Dr. McCullough, if these vaccines are so bad, how come everybody doesn't get damage and side effects? Maybe, you know, I wasn't so prepared for that. I said, well, Joe, it is a side effect. It shouldn't happen to everybody. It should be relatively rare. But you know what the basic scientists that I'm working with in a lot of, you know, work groups working every day, basically, they believe that the messenger RNA is not manufactured in a standardized way at all. If they think it's impossible for the messenger RNA to come out of the factory, if you will, the same strand. In fact, just the physically making of it must have a lot of different base pair substitutions and changes, number one. It must have humanized segments. It's been theorized that Pfizer and Moderna have maybe up to 120 humanized segments, because the human ribosome would not read a straight foreign messenger RNA. So certain segments had to be humanized, number one. That's actually was part of the trick to get the body to read it. But we've been told from the very beginning that messenger RNA is very unstable. It's loaded on lipid nanoparticles. It had to be super cooled, and then a buffer was changed. It went from almost certainly single-use vials in the clinical trials. We have a clinical trial. It's always one patient per vial. They open it, and it's either placebo or the active substance. We went from single-use vials, which is the standard in randomized trials, to multi-use vials in practice. Well, what happens with multi-use vials is that they're in and out of the refrigerator, right, as the nurses use it. They are putting needles in it, and needles introduce air. There can be oxidation, sulfation, and there are many products that actually go bad in multi-use vials. There wasn't enough time to even test whether or not multi-use vials was going to be an adequate way to handle such a delicate substance. So the experts are telling me now the answer to the Joe Rogan question is that many people get basically a dud. They get lipid nanoparticles that are either broken, the messenger RNA is crumpled, not much gets installed into the body. They may get a sore arm, but they don't get much else. They don't get actually a good genetic installation of the code. But those who do, those are the ones that just rip for a case of myocarditis. And recently, in really another shocking paper that I have to quote, this hit JAMA in this week's issue, Paul, it's really stunning, by Berald and colleagues reported on 7,750 people who have had intracranial hemorrhage or stroke just in three small Scandinavian countries. Three countries, 7,700 disastrous neurologic events within 28 days of receiving the vaccine. And they carefully censored the data for anybody when they got COVID. So the virus is not implicated. That's up on my Twitter feed. This is stunning. That's an entire legion of people, Paul, now who are neurologically devastated. Mm-hmm. So what we're seeing is these injuries fall into the pattern of FDA-recognized problems. So there's cardiovascular, which is myocarditis, but there's also an abstract in the American Heart Association using a complex, very valid multi-marker assessment called PULSE that showed that the vaccines actually trigger heart attacks. They actually trigger atherosclerotic heart attacks and strokes and sudden death, in addition to myocarditis. Blood clots. So the FDA agrees that the vaccines cause blood clots, all different types of blood clots. All the vaccines do.
And we'll pause it right there. That's Dr. Peter McCullough on Dr. Paul Thomas's podcast called Against the Wind, July 5th, 2022. We'll be right back here on Liberation Station Radio Show with the remainder of that interview. Stay tuned.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org. and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719 extension 3. 800-724-2719 extension 3.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. RL, 5 stars. Been taking this for 2 months now. I feel better. Have more energy. April, my husband started taking Extendivite and he said he feels much better and has more energy. EW, need to try. Everyone needs this for their health. Great product, great people. Josie, it works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. JC, great product, has worked well these last few years. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, in trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Welcome to the revolution. All the walls are breaking down. It's time you had a taste of losing. Time the tables turned around. I see a glimpse of the recognition, but it's too little, it's too late. And what you thought was your best decision just became your worst mistake. What I mean is why?
Back here at Liberation Station Radio Show, July 31st, 2022. I'm going to finish up with this interview with Dr. Peter McCullough on Dr. Paul Thomas's podcast, July 5th, 2022. His podcast is entitled Against the Wind, and it has so much good scientific information, but if you missed the beginning of it, I was very excited to see that for the first time I've ever noticed, Dr. McCullough mentioned that he is no longer going to administer any vaccine, COVID or otherwise. And I know you can't call COVID a vaccine, but he's not going to administer for himself or others or his recommend for his family any vaccine. And so glad that he's come so far. I asked him in my first interview with him on November 2nd, 2021, if these COVID shots have made him more skeptical of vaccines and made him more receptive to clinical nutrition. And at the time, he did not respond in the affirmative. But I learned about a month ago from Robert Scott Bell saying that he, in private conversation at the Nurse Freedom Network conference that both of them attended, that Dr. McCullough had changed his mind on all vaccines. So I'm so glad to hear him come out and say it's on Dr. Paul Thomas's podcast. And if you know of any place that Dr. McCullough has said it, please let me know. You can reach us here at 512-248-8252. That's 512-248-8252. And toll free 800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443. And let's get back into that interview, resume. Let's see, we'd have about probably till the end of the hour to finish the interview, just enough time. So, Sam, in the control room, when you're ready, please continue that clip.
A case of myocarditis, and recently in really another shocking paper that I have to quote, this hit JAMA. In this week's issue, Paul, it's really stunning. By Berald and colleagues reported on 7,750 people who have had intracranial hemorrhage or stroke just in three small Scandinavian countries. Three countries. 7,700 disastrous neurologic events within 28 days of receiving the vaccine, and they carefully censored the data for anybody when they got COVID. So the virus is not implicated. That's up on my Twitter feed. This is stunning. That's an entire legion of people, Paul, now who are neurologically devastated. Mm-hmm. So what we're seeing is these injuries fall into the pattern of FDA-recognized problems. So there's cardiovascular, which is myocarditis, but there's also an abstract in the American Heart Association using a complex, very valid multi-marker assessment called PULSE that showed that the vaccines actually trigger heart attacks. They actually trigger atherosclerotic heart attacks and strokes and sudden death, in addition to myocarditis. Blood clots. So the FDA agrees that the vaccines cause blood clots, all different types of blood clots, all the vaccines do, which you know, obviously can be devastated when they're in the brain. It can be fatal pulmonary emboli. In my clinical practice, Paul, I've seen blood clots in the same arm that the vaccine is received. Mm-hmm. And the blood clots actually occlude. There's no inflow or outflow to the arm. We actually have to remove the rib. This has happened in two women. We remove the rib and dig out the blood clot, and the arm is never the same afterwards. This is now reported in the literature, Paul. It happens in actually more athletic, younger women. That's what it was in my practice. And the setup for this is actually thoracic outlet obstruction. A lot of athletes actually have a narrowed space under the first rib. And it sounds like that's almost certainly what the second best female golfer in the world had, Nelly Korda. So this is a disaster. So blood clots is that second category. Third category is hematologic problems, well-described vaccine-induced thrombocytopenic purpura, these horrific syndromes that develop a couple weeks afterwards, nosebleeds, bleeding, there's clotting and bleeding at the same time, often fatal. Patients have to spend over a month in the hospital with them. Plasma exchange, steroids, et cetera. And then immunologic, the worst, is multi-system inflammatory disorder. And in a paper in Lancet describing what happens, typically young people, Paul, it puts them on the ventilator. They have injury to the lungs, the heart, the kidneys, the brain. I recently spoke at a symposium in Nashville. A young medical assistant, mother of three, had this syndrome. Now, about 6 months ago, she can barely walk with assistance of canes. She still has a tracheostomy in place, Paul, and she's been ravaged by one dose of Moderna with multi-system inflammatory disorder. Overall, we have over 1,000 peer-reviewed papers on fatal and non-fatal vaccine injuries. And when my Joe Rogan interview blew up, it went everywhere. It went all the way up to the White House. Neil Young, Prince Harry, Spotify executives, everyone said Dr. McCullough was spreading misinformation. Well, there was a communication back and forth between me and the White House, Jen Psaki. I said, listen, there's 1,000 papers. I'll come to Washington. There's 200 on myocarditis. We'll sit down and go over the data. We'll go over the papers one by one. Bring the Surgeon General, bring the NAID director, White House Task Force people, and we'll go over it together. Oh, no. The problem wasn't you, Dr. McCullough. You weren't spreading information. It was really Joe Rogan said the N-word a few years ago. We wanted to hit Joe Rogan. So, Paul, I can tell you it is all about the data. We've been precise with our utilization of the data. And it just is not going to stop. Within an hour from now, actually half an hour from now, I'm going to be on Fox News, Dan Bongino. And Dan's going to ask me questions. And I'm going to give the answers, and I will cite several papers. And I always do, because people can go read the papers themselves. And if there's disagreement or if I've interpreted something incorrectly, we can help. We can discuss it and help settle a common view. Yeah. That's how it works, you know?
You're one of the most rigorous scientists I've ever met. And you can quote verse, chapter, and the whole thing. Despite that meticulous nature of yours, you're being challenged by your own medical board, aren't you?
I was shocked to receive this letter dated May 26 from the American Board of Internal Medicine. And like you, I finished my primary care internal medicine training in 1991. We were the first year to actually be under continuous maintenance of certification.
Yep, me
so
too.
I've actually taken the internal medicine boards now four times. I launched my fourth decade of this. I've taken the cardiology boards 3 times and I maintain them. Only 4% of cardiologists maintain their medicine boards. But I always did, Paul, because I practiced as an internist before I went back into cardiology. And I always maintained my scope of practice being very broad, like a pediatrician or a family doctor. And I'm glad I did, because when COVID-19 hit, I was not unfamiliar with dealing with respiratory illnesses, with dealing with, you know, working with steroids and antibiotics and a variety of drugs. Even though I had this cardiology practice, I always broadly take care of the medical problems. So I was ready to rock and roll. And now, you know, 2 years of hard work in the pandemic, I've seen more patients than I've ever seen in my entire life. I've published 56 papers on COVID-19 in the peer-reviewed literature. Then I've published innumerable papers as a regular contributor by invitation in The Hill, America Out Loud Talk Radio, McCullough Report. I put my thoughts down both written and in podcast talk radio format. I mean, I am wide open. People can actually review everything I've said. And you listed by invitation what I've done for state and federal governmental bodies that have asked for my opinion. I'm going back to the Texas Senate on June 27th. In fact, tomorrow morning, I got to prepare my statement. People are asking me to help this country. And the American Board of Internal Medicine says, dear Dr. McCullough, that we have determined that there's a notice of potential disciplinary action, in that that I have made numerous widely reported disseminated public statements about the purported dangers of or the lack of justification for COVID-19 vaccines. This seems to be the issue, the vaccines. Almost as if they shouldn't be questioned, Paul. Almost as if they are presumed to be safe and effective and no one can actually review any data. The first 5 points that they point out that I've said was under sworn testimony, where I held up my hand, Paul, and I actually gave my opinion under oath. So this is the first time that I'm aware of that statements under oath now are subject of reprisal by a medical board. Now, maybe it's happened before, but under oath. Now, they go on to take on other things, either in print or in public. And so I have created, they sent me this letter that was, it was 3 pages long. Richard Barron, MD, who's a primary care doctor, president CEO, someone who does not profess to have any expertise in COVID-19. The members of this CCC committee, which will review things, they, in this letter, there is no mention that they have any expertise or medical authority in COVID-19. And three-page letter, it got a response from me that's 22 pages with references and citations, a letter asking them specifically to dismiss it. And then the following day, Senator Ron Johnson sent Richard Barron a letter from the U.S. Senate calling him out to meet with me, meet with other doctors who want to meet with him and whoever he wants to bring, and we'll have an open roundtable discussion on the data regarding COVID-19 pandemic response and the vaccines.
Best on that. I can almost guarantee they will not be taking you up on your offer.
Well, let me tell you how Barron has already responded by Twitter. Not to me or not to Johnson, but by Twitter, he tweeted that now the American Medical Association is joining forces with the ABIM to root out sources of misinformation. Remember, the individuals in the ABIM letter, they don't seem qualified to actually make any determinations on scientific validity. They wouldn't have a role in, quote, determining information or misinformation. So that's how it goes. So I tweeted out today in a little bit of fun, Paul. I tweeted out, this sequence of events, and I said, listen, AMA, why don't you go ahead and bring in the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, American College of Pediatrics, American College of Physicians, bring them all in. And the little video that went with my tweet was Neo in the second version of Matrix, where he's fighting one bad guy after another, and they start piling on. He's fighting more and more and more and more, and he's going on. And that's what I feel like right now. I just feel like, you know, why don't you bring it on? I will fight all of them. You know, this type of thing, Paul, does have to be taken to the highest level, and it has to be done very visibly.
Right.
Because this idea that doctors are going to live in this kind of quiet, foreboding censorship and reprisal and be professionally damaged by these societies that, you know, we've paid thousands of dollars. We've spent, you know, logged hundreds, if not thousands of hours on their examinations, taken their examinations. You know, they benefit a lot more from board certification than we do because they actually have their agency associated with our high quality practices.
Yeah. Well, good for you. And I'm glad you're still smiling because, man, I would be like, boom, boom, boom. And I'd be like, ugh.
No, you would be like Neo. You'd be fighting off these guys. See my Twitter feed. People love it.
Yeah, I've got to take a note out of your page out of your book for sure. Actually, you should publish your huge 22-page document as an ebook and make it available for free, because we could all use it. I mean, you're just so well written and you've got all the resources. Before I lose you, because I know you've got a big other interview to get to, is there a way for people? So you've got people who've had COVID and are suffering from the illness, but I'm more worried today about the people who are injured by the vaccine. And is there a way to help these folks, either to help them get rid of spike protein or their immune system? What do you suggest there?
Well, you know, we can have probably a 3-day seminar on that. But in short, go to the World Council for Health. They have some suggested vaccine injury recovery protocols. And recently, the Frontline Critical Care Network, FLCC.net, Dr. Merrick has devised one. There are no randomized trials. The government is not recognizing any of these vaccine injuries. We don't have NIH funding. I previously was an NIH-funded researcher. None of that's available now to the vaccine injured. So most of it's empiric in nature. I am seeing these patients like you are, Paul. I had a patient today, 38, where I got the MRI back and it lit up like a Christmas tree. She had myocarditis, so I had to call her on a Saturday. You know, I can tell you, I am dealing with these big time syndromes, blood clots in both legs, blood clots in the arms, heart damage, severe neurologic damage. I mean, severe cerebral syndrome, cerebellar syndromes. I saw a Guillain-Barré patient recovering in my office last week. And it may just be that they're seeking me out. So I think these serious syndromes need diagnoses and they need conventional treatments along those lines. But what a lot of people are asking for is you know, they've had some vaccine injury, but it doesn't fall into a big league category of diagnosis, but they're struggling. You know, common ones are headache, tinnitus, painful neuropathies, fatigue, hair falling out. You know, there's a horrendous rash that people develop, and it is an urticarial rash.
You've been messing with my mind. Well, you do it all the time. You've been messing with my mind. You know you do it all the time. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Food's primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on Long-Term Food Storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the Republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the Republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
You should get the dagger bone. Get the dagger bone. Everybody scream at school. Better get my passion breaking all the rules. Cause messing with my big kids will not be cruel. Well, I guess I'm just an educated fool.
And welcome back here to Liberation Station Radio Show. Chris Steiner with you. Going to try to finish up this interview, Dr. Peter McCullough, with Dr. Paul Thomas on his podcast, June 5th, 2022, entitled Against the Wind. And Sam, Sam there in the control room, I don't know if you caught my question in Skype, but I wanted to know where you left off at the time index so that we can synchronize the video that I'm playing for the video stream with the audio that's going out of the network. I think you started at stopped at about 44:14, 44 minutes, 14 seconds. Can you tell me where you stopped? Sam, are you there? Yeah, where did you stop on that video? In Skype. Yeah, I don't see that anywhere in Skype. So, okay, I'm ready to go. Go right ahead, please.
And there was a paper published in JAMA on how to manage it. You know how it's managed? It's actually managed with omalizumab, which is a monoclonal antibody. So you take a vaccine, and now you have to be committed to monthly monoclonal antibodies to try to manage it afterward. It's a nightmare. Do you know my co-author on my book, John Leake, on Courage to Face COVID-19, one of his former girlfriends in the UK took a vaccine, Paul. And she developed another one of these 1291 syndromes, which is a lymphomatous reaction in the axilla and in the shoulder, the supraclavicular lymph nodes, and then the clavicular cervical lymph nodes. And it became this immense reaction. Many have seen this. I've seen this in my practice. But it became so severe, it crushed her carotid artery, and she had a stroke as a young woman, Paul. This is a disaster. It is nothing short of a disaster. And each person who takes one is, in a sense, taking their life and their future into their hands. The issues are injuries, disabilities, which are occurring in large numbers, and deaths. And then June 11th of 2022, last week, World Council for Health, which represents over 70 individual organizations all over the world in different countries, World Council for Health, based on a pharmacovigilance report, called for a worldwide recall of the vaccines. Pull them all off the market. 3.5 million injured, 40,000 deaths that are certified due to the vaccines. That's what the countries are owning up to, is 40,000 deaths. It could be scores more. Pantazatos and Solomon from Colombia, they have the U.S. number at 287,000 Americans, upper limit of confidence interval, Paul, died. And that's concordant with what we're seeing in life insurance. Just yesterday, Lincoln National reported a 63% excess rate of death claims for employed people and their plans. This is astronomical. The only new thing that happened in 2021 is the COVID-19 vaccine.
Yep.
And hold on, is there?
Astounding. One last question, and I'll let you go also get you to...
Okay, we'll be right back here to finish this interview up here on Liberation Station Radio Show for the second and final hour. Chris Steiner with you. We'll be right back.
Tom Bolton for EaseOff. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC. 417-932-6419.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.